Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, and I forget the rest. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange, Joshua P. Warrens, speaking of strange, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. I am Sam the Animal Steel, joined this evening by my guest hostess with the mostest, Miss Shannon Ollis. She said I could say her last name. And we were just, you know, we're kind of free-forming it. We're free-flowing, free-falling, as Tom Petty might say. So while we took a break there, had to run to the little boys, little girls' room or whatever. She has only been in the station, the studios here, like, what, once?
Just one other time.
Yeah, one other time. So I had told her, I was like, I'm going to see if she, because I don't feel, I'm not especially sensitive to, paranormal beings or ghosts, and you are more sensitive to those things, I would say.
Yes.
And so I was like, well, based on what I've heard from Shelley Wright, Miss Shelley Wright, who we miss tonight, hopefully she'll be back soon. She had told me that there was one place in the building that more so than anywhere else, she had felt these, feelings of, I don't want to say ghosts, but she felt these feelings. So I was like, well, I won't tell you where they're at. We'll see if you can figure it out. And I came back into the studio here, and I was getting ready, and she came back in. And tell them what happened there.
Well, I felt something in the restroom.
In the restroom.
And I was like, oh, well, okay. Clearly there is something here. And I wasn't sure if, like, that was just the room or not, because, you know, sometimes you'll feel it in several rooms or in one room more strongly than another. But I walked out, and I didn't see Sam, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to walk back in there, because I didn't feel it in the hallway so much. And I walked back in. I'm like, is there something? Is this it? Is this where it is? And I walked back out. I walked down the hallway, and then I literally took my arms out. It's like I could feel where it started and stopped, and it just kept leading me right to the bathroom.
So. Which is very strange, because we are at the Radio Ranch, the building next door is the original broadcast building, which has been around for a long time. This is a newer building built probably like a decade or so ago, but it doesn't have quite the history the old building has. You know, like, it's a lot creepier, it's a lot older. There's a bomb shelter from the Cold War era down there, and that's kind of creepy. There's like rats and stuff down, and you can hear them scurrying around. This is a much nicer building, so you don't think that, like, it doesn't seem like, as far as I know, there's nobody has died in here or anything. But, like, when they built this building, I guess the women's room could have been on top of something, or where do spirits come from? What are the options of those things that you could have felt?
I mean, I would think it could have been something, sure, it could have been, like, a human spirit or somebody who passed here, or maybe was attracted to here, or
old
maybe
Gary,
to the
janitor down the hall. I forgot to talk about old
somebody
Gary.
Buried in the walls.
No, he just likes to hang out in the stall over there. Old Gary.
Maybe he resides.
Well, he doesn't. We told him, you know, look, just clean the place up. You know, he cleans it up. Maybe he just sticks around. I don't know. Maybe that's what you were feeling. Just Gary sitting there. He's like, oh crap, somebody's in here.
Like, it didn't feel like anything specific. It definitely didn't feel negative. I think I would have, I mean, I can distinctively differentiate. You can tell.
That's good.
It is good. It's handy. I mean,
I'm typically here alone by myself late at night. So, and it's already, I get spooked out around this building, not in the building so much, but it's pitch black outside.
Right.
It's very dark. There's a lot of field. There's a lot of animals. Like, the other night I was driving up here, it wasn't terribly late either, it was probably only like 8, 9 o'clock or something, and a fox came bolting across the parking lot, and just, I mean, it was fast. It was like, shoo! And I was like, what? I mean, I've seen, you know, we used to have a very mean turkey.
A mean turkey?
Oh my gosh. A mean turkey. And this thing would, you would park the car, and you'd have to be like, okay, got my stuff, go! It's like, you know, like when it's pouring rain and you're going to try to not get wet by running, you know, from the car. It was like that, but trying to avoid this turkey attacking you. And I had video. I don't know if I still have it anywhere. I made it into like the breezeway, the trap between two doors. And this mug was like just attacking the door behind me, just bah, 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 leaving waddle prints all over it and stuff. Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah, turkeys ain't no joke, man.
No.
There's, you know, like bears and there's all sorts of tomfoolery and shenanigans go on in the fields up here, you know, trespassers and the whatnot. Now,
well,
you know,
yeah.
I have to deal with, you know, poltergeists or whatever. But actually, I did. I was going to talk something about. I showed you that book last night about the ghosts on the USS North Carolina.
Yes.
I did bring that book. I scored that the other day at the Goodwill. Oh, I also brought the book about the devil music.
Oh.
Satan and the rock and roll. It's a subject that's come up here on Speaking of Strange before. I think it's always a fun one, and we were listening to some backmasking last night. Did we not find out that Lady Gaga, demon-possessed?
Demon-possessed.
Justin Bieber's baby, if played backwards and slowed down, A, sounds really creepy.
Yes.
B, apparently is hearkening Satan for some reason or another. But he's born again now. So I don't know how that affects previously recorded backmasked teeny bopper music. Before we jump into things, I just wanted to tell you that we are brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Log on to HauntedAsheville.com and you can book a tour. You got the classic walking tour, and it's about a two-hour-long tour, you know, and they got great tour guides. You know Tad.
Yes.
Tad McDivitt.
Very knowledgeable.
He is very knowledgeable, and I had not met him. And the first time I met him, we were at the Charlotte Street Pub. And we were sitting next to each other. We had a great conversation. Just we immediately clicked, like, same wavelength. Very quiet kind of guy, you know. Like,
yeah.
We don't have exactly the same personality by any means. But we were very much on the same wavelength. And they'll take you down to the streets of downtown Asheville. And that one's a pretty family-friendly trip, so it's okay to, you know, bring the slightly younger ones with you. Nothing too scary, but you can also go on the new Supernatural tour. This one, I've not been on this one, but like they go into like the True Agenda, the Freemasons. Why is there a witch's tree in City County Plaza? What was the bizarre creature that terrorized our jail inmates in 1908? Are some of the buildings in our town truly demon possessed?
I would like to know the answers to all of those.
Well, if you would like to know, then log on to HauntedAsheville.com and book yourself a supernatural tour. Do so because they do sell out quick, especially when Joshua P. is back in town. Those sell out really quick. So where did we leave off last hour? We were talking, I believe, about sleep paralysis, night terrors, things of that nature. If I am correct, right?
Yes.
It says, since your dreams may involve you moving and walking around, your brain shuts down communication to your muscles during your REM, deep sleep, or dreaming sleep, so that you don't actually move and walk around when you should be in bed. In that sense, paralysis during sleep is totally normal. But the scary type of sleep paralysis occurs when you are awake enough to be aware of your surroundings, but your body is still paralyzed. It can happen as you are falling asleep or as you are waking up. And although it is terrifying, it can happen at night. It has no relation to night terrors. They are opposites in a sense, because in a night terror, you are asleep but moving around.
Right.
In sleep paralysis, you are awake.
Yes, it's
but cannot
horrible.
Move. Now, you said that you've had these quite often. Do you have you ever had hallucinations?
Yes, I have. And also, it's weird because sleep paralysis can get you, like, you'll come out of it and then you'll go right back into it. It's like it just hits you down and hits you down, like, time after time. But I have one time I was like, this is gonna sound silly, but for me it was really, really horrifying. But behind my shoulder I could see what I can only describe as having looked like a black balloon, but like a perfectly, so like a non-human head, in other words. Like, was possible, like a being was possibly behind me. I didn't see a body or a being or a face, or I just saw the shape of like a black balloon. The most horrifying thing I had was actually after I had a supernatural experience. And this is a long time ago. My parents were out of town and my sister and I were to be joining them. And I ended up getting, and I do not scare easily, mind you, but I ended up getting scared. So I went and I slept with my sister. And I went into sleep paralysis. And in between us, I saw this thing that was almost like half of a human's body with almost like smoke coming out for legs. And it was like black. And it was just the way it was creeping up in between us. It was so horrifying. I refused to sleep. And I had a really long drive that next day. I refused to sleep after that.
So it's very Nightmare on Elm Street-ish.
It's horrible because you see what you perceive as what maybe my mind's perception of what a demon would look like, for example. I've seen that. You just see, I guess, your mind is projecting. I don't know why during sleep paralysis it tends to be horrifying images versus like flowers and butterflies. But
well, it could be what you put into your brain.
Well, it's like a feeling. It's when it comes on, it's already scary.
Well, it says that a lot of people do hallucinate during sleep paralysis, and
right.
There's like three different types that are the common hallucinations. One is an intruder that is in the room with you. One is a crushing feeling on your chest or back, or one is a feeling of flying or levitating. Those would be the three most common of the hallucinations.
And you can experience all of them.
and people who have experienced those have described them as demons, dark clouds, burglars, and other unwelcome creatures.
Yes.
So that pretty much falls in line with what you were just saying there.
Yeah. I one time set a camera up because I kept on getting hit with a sleep paralysis over and over, and I really wanted to see if I could record and catch anything. Like, just what's happening to me when I'm, like, am I moving? It feels like I'm shaking. You know, you can feel like you're sitting up when you're coming out of it, and you literally feel like you're sitting up, but you have your eyes closed and expect to open your eyes and be sitting, and you're laying down. But I set up a recorder, and it had happened, and I was all excited. And then I checked it, and apparently my sleep paralysis happened to start going in right as my recorder was about ready to stop. It stops at 30 minutes. And you can see the camera shaking at the end.
And it's not you.
No, it was nobody. There was nobody in the room with me. But that's the only thing I've ever captured. Nothing else.
Well, there you have it. Something going on. Have you ever heard that story? We'll get to it when we get back. I'll brief you during the break. You are listening to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual, here on News Radio 570 WWNC. Stick around for more strangeness. In the case of Christianity and Judaism, there exists a belief that spiritual matters are enslaved to history. The Buddhists believe that the functional aspects override the myth, while other religions use a literal core to build foundations with. Just a present native.
blame me for your false indicators. You mistaken all my mistakes for my crooked nature.
Oh my God, I think I saw a ghost. This is Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you tonight by HauntedAsheville.com. Log on to HauntedAsheville.com and book yourself a haunted tour through the downtown streets of our Hauntedville in this mountain alcove. Well, there's a lot of strange things that go on around here. Have been for a long time. So before the break, we had started talking about, I was like, hold on, let me think of it. What I was trying to think of was the Enfield Poltergeist. And Shannon, co-host here tonight, Shannon Ollis, she had remembered it before I did. She popped it right out. And how much about this case do you know?
I actually don't know a whole lot about the case. I know it involves a 11 or 12-year-old girl who was affected by family, or along with her family, by a poltergeist.
And I think they made movie, they made up like The Conjuring.
Loosely based.
So I was really like, I know we've brought it up on the show in the past, briefly here and there, but I wanted to, since we had been talking about some spirits and stuff, this particular case, I have the book at the house. It intrigued me more so than some others, not only because of the intensity of the haunting or whatnot, but just by how many, it wasn't just like somebody said they saw it. It was witnessed by so many people who didn't have anything to like gain by, you know, who were like viewed as you know, trustworthy people in the community, police right. officers, priests. You know, so many different people saw the evidence of this, and it was so, you know, these poltergeists were not playing around, and it was, like, terrifying, you know. Like,
right.
And this kind of stuff spooks me out, legit. Like, I get spooked out for sure over, I only watched The Exorcist once, you know. I can deal, like, it was fine. I'll watch it five more times. But when it comes to, like, you know, I'm not really that worried about an it in my real life, but I'd be
right.
more worried about some evil spirits or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So just what happened then in Enfield, that's over in Ingerland across the pond all those years ago? Well, this was the story as the Hodgson family told it. 1977 was the year. Peggy Hodgson, that was the she was unusual at that time. That was she was the matriarch of the clan, a single mother to four children, Margaret, Janet. Margaret was 12, Janet 11. Johnny 10 and Billy 7, not a whole lot of room in between those.
No.
Margaret getting, or Peggy getting down there. 12, 11, and 10. Good God, that's like, that sounds awful. Like, anyway. She split from their father, and it was the evening of August 30th, 1977, and Mrs. Hodgson was keen to get her children into bed. I'm sure, as she would be, you have four kids. Like, all right, bedtime.
Yes.
Go to bed. She heard Janet complaining from upstairs that her and her brother's beds were wobbling. Mrs. Hodgson told her daughter to stop mucking around. The following evening, however, there was an altogether more bizarre disturbance. Miss Hodgson heard a crash from upstairs. She was a little perturbed, and she went to tell the kids to, you know, quiet down. Stop, you're fooling around. You know, kids always get a little cray before bedtime. She entered their bedroom. And along with Janet's Starsky and Hutch posters on the wall, which is awesome,
yes. Anyway,
Mrs. Hodgson saw the chest of drawers move. She pushed it back but found that it was being propelled towards the door by an invisible force. It seemed as if some supernatural presence was trying to trap the family in the room with the heavy oak chest. Now, years later, Janet would tell a Channel 4, BBC Channel 4 documentary, it started in a back bedroom. The chest of drawers moved, and you could hear shuffling. Mom said, I want you to pack it in. We told her what was going on, and she came to see it for herself. She saw the chest of drawers moving. When she tried to push it back, she couldn't. Janet's sister Margaret explained how the activity increased. There were strange little noises in the house. You couldn't make out what was going on. None of us got sleep. We put on our dressing gowns and slippers and went next door. So the family went next door to ask for help from their neighbors, Vic and Peggy Nottingham, which is the most British names I've heard all day.
Very much.
Vic and Peggy Nottingham. Vic, a burly builder, he went out to investigate. He says, I should do it in like a hole in there. I couldn't make out these noises. There was a knocking on the wall in the bedroom, on the ceiling. I was beginning to get a bit frightened. I won't do that for the whole time. I'm sorry. Margaret adds, he said, I don't know what to do. I'd never seen a big man like that looking scared. Well, the Hodgsons called the police, who proved to be a similarly mystified. You know, back then, the police, how were they going to deal with it? You know, they're like constables in a small village of Enfield. Well, one of the police officers saw a chair move. She said at the time, a large armchair moved, unassisted, 4 feet across the floor. Now, this is like the first of many sightings by not the family, you know, from people who I would assume in 1977 the police were probably a little more trustworthy. I don't know. But, you know, so she sees this now unassisted 4 feet across the floor. She inspected the chair for hidden wires because obviously thinking like this isn't real. Like, but she could find no explanation for what she had seen. Well, eventually the officers left. They told the family that the incidents were not a police matter. They couldn't find anyone breaking the law. So, I mean, fair enough.
Right.
You know, sorry, can't help you out there. But so next, the family contacted the press. And they contacted the Daily Mirror photographer, Graham Morris, who visited the house. And he said it was chaos with things flying around and people screaming. Now, this is where it gets really interesting, is because a lot of these events were actually captured on camera and on film. And the images are really disturbing. I showed you a couple of them. I mean, I want to blow that one up like to a poster or something. It would just be like a really, it's a striking image regardless of what's happening. But you see a girl of 11, 12 years old or something like that who was dead asleep, you know, one moment. And then she's getting flung through the air. And you can't even if she was like Jackie Chan working on like wires or whatever.
Right.
You know, which I doubt in 1977 rural Britain she was. But it's a crazy photo, you know, like of her just flailing through the air.
Yeah.
Like she's getting thrown by a huge hand, you know. So some of these were captured on camera. The images, it's disturbing. One shows Janet's elfin form, and she is rather tiny, apparently being thrown across the room. In others, her face is distorted in pain. The BBC went to the house, but the crew found the metal components in their tape equipment had been twisted and the recordings had been erased. So the family sought help for the Society for Psychical? I'm like trying to sound psychical research, the SPR, if you're into that whole brevity thing. It set investigators Maurice Gross and Guy-Leon Playfair, a poltergeist expert who subsequently wrote a book, This House is Haunted, about this encounter. The author, Will Storr, spoke to Gross, who has since passed away, when he was researching his own book, Will Storr versus the Supernatural, which also features this case. Gross told him, as soon as I got there, I realized that the case was real because the family was in a bad state. Everybody was in chaos. When I first got there, nothing happened for a while. Then I experienced Lego pieces flying across the room and marbles. And the extraordinary thing was, when you picked them up, they were hot. I was standing in the kitchen and a T-shirt leapt off the table and flew into the other side of the room while I was standing by it. The investigators found themselves caught in a maelstrom of apparently psychic activity with every poltergeist trick thrown at them. Sofas levitated, furniture spun around and was flung across the room, and the family would be hurled out of their beds at night. One day, Morrison, a visiting neighbor, found one of the children shouting, I can't move, it's holding my leg. They had to wrestle the child from what all involved insisted was the grip of invisible hands. The ongoing knocking was one of the most chilling aspects of the case. It would run down the hall, fading in and out, as it apparently played an unnerving game with the family, who became so scared that they slept in the same room with the lights on. And most of this activity centered on the 11-year-old, Janet. She went into violent trances, which were like apparently truly awful to see. On one occasion, the iron fireplace in her bedroom was wrenched from the wall by unseen forces. And there are pictures of this, too, which is crazy. Because, like, a big heater in an old British house. It's surly. It's a big, heavy-duty brass thing, you know, or iron. And it's twisted. Like, you can see the metal is bent. And, like, you couldn't do that with even, like, a big pipe wrench or something, like, beating on it, you know. Family members who were there also claimed to have seen her levitating, floating clean across the room. And she told BBC Channel 4, "I felt used by a force that nobody understands. I really don't like to think about it too much. I'm not sure the poltergeist was truly evil. It was almost as if it wanted to be part of our family."
That's interesting. An interesting view.
Yeah. You know, like, that's one of those things with the poltergeists. They like to play the game. Like, they're very, what's the word, mischievous?
Yes.
Yeah. We are getting ready to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to visit a little bit more of the Enfield Poltergeist, which I think is a pretty interesting case.
It is very scary. Oh.
Anyway, you're listening to Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Stick around. We will be back in just a few minutes on News Radio 570 WWNC. An invisible man sleeping in your bed? You're going to call Danny Aykroyd and Bill Murray? I think I'm going to call somebody with more firepower if there's a man sleeping in my bed. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com here on News Radio 570 WWNC and online at SpeakingOfStrange.com. You can also visit JoshuaPWarren.com. Is there a period after the P? No. Co-host Shannon, I was not on the ball with that one. Is there a period after the P? No. The answer is there's no. It's no. Joshua P. Warren.
It's Joshua P. Warren.
.com. No period. After the P. And yes. And you can stream this if you're not around or if you're out of town on your iHeartRadio app. Downloadable for your smartphone, your iPhone, your Android device, your Google, whatever you got. Basically, these days, everybody's got something. Sorry, I had to go with the lazy route of Ghostbusters there. I'm sure that for anybody in the paranormal field who is, you know, a serious hunter of these things, like, they're like, oh, my God, not the ghost. But, you know, it does fit a number of categories, especially when you're on a time constraint and you're like, oh, crap, I did not write out my bumper music like I should have. Ghostbusters is always a good fallback. So when we left before the break, we were talking about the Enfield Poltergeist. It's one of the most famous haunting cases. It's definitely one of the most well-documented as far as videos, pictures, audio recordings. And to me, it's one of the most fascinating ones. I feel awful for those girls. I mean, for the whole family involved. It basically just messed up their entire lives. So where we had left, we were talking about Janet, the 11-year-old, where most of the activity centered around, and she had gone into violent trances. She would go into these quite often, and she said something interesting about not knowing if the poltergeist was truly evil, almost as if it wanted to be part of the family. But I think, like with some of the things that go on, you're like, maybe it wanted to be the like part of the family that you don't really like, or
it wanted to be the bad child.
Yeah. She said, it didn't want to hurt us. It had died there and wanted to be at rest. The only way it could communicate was through me and my sister. Now, some cast doubt on the events. Two SPR experts caught the children bending spoons themselves and questioned why no one was allowed in the same room as Janet when she was using her gruff voice, apparently that of Bill Wilkins. Can you pull up some audio of that, and we'll play that if you get it up. Just pull up some audio of Janet, of the Enfield Poltergeist voice.
Okay. Let's see.
So, indeed, later on, Janet had admitted that they did fabricate some of the occurrences. Back in 1980, she told ITV News, oh, okay, once or twice we faked the phenomena just to see if Mr. Gross and Mr. Playfair would catch us, and they always did. Well, now, as of a couple years ago, she was in her mid to late 40s, living in Essex with a husband who was a retired milkman, also a very British thing. She said, I wasn't very happy to hear about the film, The Conjuring, I believe is what they're referencing. I didn't know anything about it. My dad had just passed away, and it really upset me to think of all this being raked over again. And she described the poltergeist activity as traumatic, saying it was an extraordinary case. It's one of the most recognized cases of paranormal activity in the world, but for me, it was quite daunting. I think it really left its mark. The activities, the newspaper attention, the different people in and out of the house. It wasn't a normal childhood. And asked about how much of the phenomena at Green Street was faked, she says 2%. Now, she also admitted to playing with a Ouija board with her sister just before the activity flared up at the house. I've always been, like, I grew up in a very religious household. Ouija board, the Milton Bradley board game, was frowned upon. You know, it was not ever going to be in our house.
Right.
But even as an adult now, I'm like, who are the ad wizards who say, like, Ouija board should be like a board game for kids? It just doesn't seem to me like that's a great idea, you know, because I think you can invite some things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're not knowing what you're doing and you're just, you know, innocently like, oh, let's...
Yeah, especially kids.
Yeah, you know, like, let's... And Bloody Mary is one thing in a dark bathroom.
Yes.
But, like, calling up spirits or something, like, that could really get you into a pickle.
Oh,
I think as
yes.
Janet found out.
Poor girl.
She says she was unaware that when she went into into trances until she actually saw the pictures, much like being blacked out drunk. And then, you know, seeing pictures of yourself later on, like, oh, my goodness, was that me here? Let's see. So you got some audio there?
I do.
Let me pull up your monitor or your screen here.
I didn't know you could spy on what I was looking at.
I can't spy on what you're looking at, but I can play the audio. You'll have to hit. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, go.
It's not working.
We're trying to pull up some audio from the Enfield Poltergeist. case.
Okay. I think it's working. Do you hear anything?
No. We shall pull this up. Not getting any luck with that. So she didn't know that she even went into trances until she saw the pictures. She says, I knew when the voices were happening, of course. It felt like something was behind me all the time. They did all sorts of tests, filling my mouth with water and so on, but the voices still came out. It was hard. I had a short spell in a psychiatric hospital in London where they stuck electrodes on my head, not to give her electroshock therapy, but apparently the tests proved normal. The levitation was scary, I would say so, because you didn't know where you were going to land. I remember a curtain being wound around my neck. I was screaming. I thought I was going to die. My mom had to use all her strength to rip it away. The man who spoke through me, Bill, seemed angry because we were in his house. What do you think about all?
I think I've got the.
Oh, okay.
Possibly got that.
All right,
audio.
Let's try it again. Yep. This would be of Bill, or.
Yeah, but it's still not. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I tried.
So I'll try to pull it up over here. What do you think about all that? I mean, do you think that, how much, because you've seen some of the pictures, like, do you think the girls could have faked any of that? Or, like, I mean, how much of that could
have
been?
Yeah, I mean, some of it looks as though, because it's happening right, like, some of the pictures that's, I guess it could be argued, that are taken where she's right beside or right over her bed. I mean, she could have just jumped up and put her arms and her legs up.
But I mean, if you actually see the film of that, I mean, I don't even see how that, I don't know. The look on her face is...
I think it looks legit.
I think these Starsky and Hutch posters in the background really make it. But the voice that came out of this little girl, this 11-year-old girl, his name was Bill, and this is some of the audio.
Let me say my name. Come on. Let me hear you say my name. Now, if you squeak the bed, I can't hear you talking. Now, say Dr. Belloc. Come on. Come on, say it for me, Dr. Belloc.
Dr. Belloc.
I don't know about you, but that's, like, terrifying.
Wow, yes.
Like, whenever you hear, and especially, like, we can't see, especially if you're listening on the radio, you can't see the little girl making that voice that's not supposed to be coming out of a little girl, you know, like a old man's voice. That's always been one of the freakiest things to me about any, like, possession case or whatever, is, like, when you see, sort of like you were talking about earlier, things that look human or like they have human characteristics, but they're, it's like she's speaking, but she's speaking in the voice of obviously something that's not supposed to be coming out of that mouth.
Right.
That's always like one of, if you ask me what things I'm scared of, that would be one of them. Like weird voices coming out of faces and bodies that shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You are listening to Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. Coming up for the last segment of the hour before the Dark 30, I'm going to do a little thing. I picked up a book the other day about ghosts on the battleship North Carolina, which is docked in Wilmington. We'll check into that. I'm up after the break. Speaking of Strange.
On from the Chippewa on down at the big lake they call Gitche Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling?
This is Speaking of Strange, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Joshua P. Warren. As well, I believe he's back down in Puerto Rico for the first time since the big storm. And just a reminder to everybody that, if I'm correct down there right now, still 50% of the population or more without, after all these months, still without power, without water, in you know, worse than third world type circumstances. And while everything else just moves on because, you know, the news cycle continues. I mean, he didn't even know if any of his stuff was there, if he had anything left at all, or if it was all gone. And, you know, just by chance, him and Lauren, his wife, had made it here not to escape the hurricane. It's happened to leave right before. And, you know, it was fortuitous timing, to say the least. But that was some crazy stuff, man.
Absolutely.
So just keep that in mind. And if you have the opportunity or anything, give you know, a couple bucks to an organization that you would trust or something to help out those people down there. Before we go to the Dark 30 Hour, which is going to be next hour, I had picked up this book the other day called Ghosts on the Battleship North Carolina, which is now docked in Wilmington. And it's written by a guy, as told by Danny Bradshaw. And Danny, you know, he tells of, this is back in 1976, the year of my birth, the bicentennial. His dad and him ran a car dealership, and at night he would go over to the battleship to play cards with the night watchman. And the night guy would tell him about the ghost. Well, one night he was like, you know, I've been doing this for a while. If you'd like, you know, this job could be yours, you know, and it's time for me to make a change. And he's like, well, you know, this could work out pretty well with my, you know, work schedule. I could come here at night and, you know, make some good extra money and have like a good plan. So the caretaker of the boat starts taking him around, and he shows him all the things that he would have to do at night, you know, as far as latching hatches and setting alarms and inspecting locks, turning off lights and something. And so Danny says, you know, I feel like there's something that you're leaving out. And the caretaker is like, Danny, there is one other thing. You know those jokes I always make about ghosts? Well, they're not jokes. There really are ghosts. Danny says, you're telling me this ship is haunted by a ghost? And he says, ghosts, Danny, ghosts. That's exactly what I'm telling you, as he leaned against the railing and looked out across the Cape Fear River. Danny, I know you may not believe me, but it's true. There are ghosts on this ship. Now, the ship had been in service and had been hit by a torpedo, and a total of 10 men had died on that ship. Well, as they continued to go, you know, inspect the deck, his first night alone on the ship is called First Encounter. I just wanted to read a little bit from this before we go to the break. Says, in the wintertime, the ship closes at night at 5. Generally by 6, I am through with everything I have to do in closing up and setting the alarms. I watch TV, listen to music, or get a book to read. And one night I was thinking about going down below deck to look for a small table for my living room area. I needed something to put my lamp on, and I will admit that I didn't want to go to the lower level of the ship by myself, so I called John to come over and help me look for a table. He told me there was a lot of furniture and stuff stored on the ship down in what was called the bullpen. So when he got there, we each collected a flashlight and slowly made our way down below. As we were descending into the bowels of the ship, John started telling me about some of the sailors who were killed on the battleship during the war and where the torpedo had hit. Well, they reached the bottom of the ladder and walked over to climb down to the next level. John said, "I don't like being down here, Danny." He pointed towards the ladder. "This is the area where the torpedo struck, but this is where the tables are stored. We're sure to find one for the duty room." And just ahead of us was a great hatch. The hatch there weighs at least 400 to 600 pounds. It's 4 to 6 inches thick, made of iron. The way it's angled back makes it impossible for it to just fall forward, even if the hook is pulled back. Well, at this point, I realized that I forgot to set the alarm. So I said, "John, do you mind if I go back up? I have to set the alarm. It'll only take a minute." But he says, "Just come straight back." I was back in less than 10 minutes. When I got back, I said, "Looks like you've seen a ghost." He looked at me and said, "When did you get back?" "Just now. We need to get out of here." We got out of the hatch, got back up on deck, and John looked. He looked like he had seen a ghost. He had white face. His words were tumbling out in a great rush. He said that after he left, he heard this loud crashing noise, and the big hatch had slammed shut. And he realized he was trapped, and the hatch is way too heavy for him to push open by himself. He remembered the ladder on the other side of the area. Thank God that hatch was open over there, because there's no way that hatch can fall by itself. Someone would have to take the hook off and get behind it and push it shut. He said, "Danny, the ghost didn't like us back in that area of the ship. I suggest you never go back down there by yourself." And having just looked up something, it looks like the team from TV's Ghost Hunters is going to be in the Wilmington area doing a public investigation of the battleship North Carolina in the near future.
Fun.
I guess it could be. It's a little pricey, but it is cool that it's, you know, I like old ships. And yeah, they definitely have a lot of spooky history and whatnot on there. And knowing one that is probably haunted, I don't know, that'd be pretty nifty. All right, coming up next, shield the ears of the youngsters should they be around. The Dark 30 Hour is about to commence. You are listening to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, here on News Radio 570 WWNC. Catch you at the top of the hour.